Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion for June 15 and 16, 2012, from sundown to sundown. This Torah portion is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. Shalach Lecha. It is Numbers chapter 13, verse 1 to chapter 15, verse 41. The Haftarah is Joshua 2, verses 1 to 24. And the Brit Hadashah is Hebrews chapter 3, starting in verse 7 to chapter 4, verse 1. Shalach Lecha has much to teach us about how to transition from one state of mind to another, from a slave mentality to a free man's mentality, from the place where we are now in history on the earth to the place where we want to be. And of course, part of that is going through the tribulation. Let's go to Numbers 13 and start in verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the people of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a chief among them." The beginning of Shalach Lecha raises questions in many people's minds about why the spies were sent in the first place. Was God testing Israel? Remember that the people had just suffered losses several times because of complaining and disobedience that God had followed up with spankings. You know, the kind of spankings that make people die. So, was God testing them? Well, probably. And after those spankings, makes you wonder how they had the chutzpah to defy God there in the wilderness just before he wanted to take them as his bride over the threshold and give them their biggest gift ever. But it was more likely that the test was one of whether or not they were ready and willing to follow instructions and whether they would be able to overcome their slave mindset in the end after having failed 9 previous tests. After all, up to this point, they had proven themselves unable to pass any of the tests, hadn't they? So this last one was probably a test in both directions. They were going to test him, and he was testing them to see if they would do one thing that he told them to do correctly, and that was to go and accept the gift that he was giving them. So this was a test to see if they would be willing to give up their slave mindset, not just to overcome it, but to give it up. And in the coming years, this is going to be the challenge for the Hebrew people that are coming together around the world now. It's going to be a test of whether or not we are willing to give up our slave mentality, get along with each other, do what the Lord says, and get through the tribulation as overcomers, or not. There is one more opportunity for the children of Israel to get it right. So, this first part of Shalach Lecha is about the slave mentality. It is about how to transition from slavery to freedom. It tells us what not to do. You see, a slave's mind is one that has no imagination and is non-adaptive. Now, all imagination and creativity have been beaten out of the slave. All a slave can do is take orders. He cannot think outside his own frame of reference. He can't think outside the box, as we say these days. You know, the reason for this is because if he becomes a free thinker, so to speak, he risks his life. He becomes afraid for his life. And slaves simply cannot withstand change. It just messes them up. So what does it mean to not be a slave? Does it mean to be the exact opposite, which is someone who simply won't take orders, whose imagination runs wild and who follows every whim of his imagination? What is the in-between thing there? You know, what is in between someone who has to take orders or die and someone who refuses to take orders even though those orders mean life? The difference between the two has to do with choice. Slaves have no choice but to obey their harsh masters. But free men have the choice to obey. And obeying means that you are a free man. Disobeying means you're still a slave. Many people think that obedience to God equals slavery. But that's just backwards from the reality. The reality is the other way around. You're only free if you can choose. And if you choose wrongly, you're still a slave. Right now, the Hebrew Roots community is learning the difference between being a slave and being free. Our first act of choice will be to obey God when it comes time to leave everything behind and go into the wilderness of the peoples, won't it? So we have to ask ourselves what we will do when God says it's time to go. Are we going to be like these shaliach, these men that were sent to reconnoiter the land of Canaan? Are we going to find excuses to stay behind, to not go? Or are we going to make the announcement to our family and friends that, you know, we're going to go and they can come with us or they can stay where they are? Well, it really does come down to this, doesn't it? And actually, that right there is going to be the first test for us, isn't it? So now is a good time to start preparing to answer this question. Those who answered correctly way back then, those two men, Joshua and Caleb, got to go to the land, didn't they? Those who didn't answer correctly did not get to go. The children of Israel had to wait 40 years for those with the slave mentality to die because God does not want slaves. He wants people who choose because they are free, and they are free because He has set them free, and they're able to recognize this. Now, you see, a lot of believers don't know they're free yet. They keep acting just like slaves who can't pick up a Bible to use it to correct their own lives because they think the stuff in the Bible will just enslave them in another way. Okay, moving on. Go to Numbers 13:3. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran according to the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the people of Israel. And these were their names: from the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zakur; from the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori; from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; from the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun; from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu; from the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodi; from the tribe of Joseph, that is, from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Susi; from the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali; from the tribe of Asher, Setur, the son of Michael; from the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, the son of Vophshi; from the tribe of Gad, Guel, the son of Machi. These were the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, and Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. Now we're going to take a look at these names. We're going to break them down because there's some interesting teaching here in these names. Let's go one by one, and this is, just stick with me. I know this is going to be a little boring at first, but just hang in here with me because you're going to see something. Number one, Reuben. The tribe of Reuben was represented by Shammua. His name means a hearkener. It's Strong's 8051. The tribe of Simeon was represented by Shaphat. Shaphat means a judge. It's Strong's 8202. The tribe of Judah was represented by Caleb. It means wholehearted, and it means a dog. Strong's 36:12. Issachar was represented by Igal. It means avenger, and some say it means he will redeem. Strong's 3008. Ephraim was represented by Oshea, which means deliverer, and also this is Joshua's name. It's Strong's 19:54. Benjamin was represented by Palti. It means delivered, and some say it means my escape. It's Strong's 6406. Zebulun was represented by Gadiel, which means fortune of God, or my fortune is God. It's Strong's 14:27. Manasseh was represented by Gadi, which means fortunate. It's Strong's 14:26. Dan was represented by Amiel, which means people of God. That's Strong's 59:88. Asher was represented by Setur, which means hidden. Strong's 56:39. Naphtali was represented by Nabi, which means secret or occult. It's Strong's 51:47. And Gad was represented by Guel, which is majesty of God. Strong's 13:45. By the way, I gave you all those Strong's numbers just so that you can go and look up the actual meaning according to Strong's. Now, those are the positive aspects of those names. Now, what about the negative aspects? What can we learn from the negative aspects of these names? Now, many people believe that the list I'm going to give you now is more appropriate. And looking back on it, of course, you know, this is what we would say. The interesting thing, though, is that in this next list is the prophecy that's found in these names. Literally, the names of the 10 spies who came back with the negative report speak a prophecy against them. And you'll be able to put that prophecy together as I show you what the negative aspects of their names mean. So, you know, like I said, of course, we can see now, you know, what that's all about, but they couldn't see it at the time. Let's go back to Shammua. Negatively, it means rumor. Shaphat. Negatively, it means condemnation. Igal. Negatively, it means recompense. Palti. Negatively, it means escape. Gadiel. Negatively, it means fortune is my mighty one. Gadi negatively means my fortune. Amiel has an opposite, which is lo ami, meaning not my people. Setur means hidden. Nabi means runaway. And Guel negatively means pride. Now, what is the difference between these two lists? Nothing more than attitude, plain and simple. One attitude says, I'm a slave, so all I can be is this negative stuff. The other says, I'm free, and I choose to serve God, and that will make me more than the sum total of all my parts. So, let's examine the negative attitude that we know these 10 men displayed. Rumor. Well, that's starting them, enjoying them, and spreading them. Condemnation. That's putting others down in order to make oneself superior. Recompense. Getting even. Fortune is my mighty one. That's loving money and wealth over everything else. And my fortune, what's in it for me? And not my people? I'm my own boss. Escape. Refusing to take responsibility for one's actions. Hidden. Secretive. Run away. Refuse to display courage. Pride. I am God. So you see, when we take a look at these names and take their negative aspects, we can see what these people were doing. Their names were telling their characters. Now, their names, I don't believe, are a prophecy for us here at the end. The reason that I say that is because in the book of Revelation, we learn that the overcomers are so many that they can't be counted. You see, that's just opposite of what's happened at the beginning. At the end, it's going to be different. The Bible clearly tells us this. At the beginning, though, only two people out of that entire generation from 20 years forward went into the land to take the land. But here at the end, as we go through the tribulation and we keep gathering people into our camps, by the end of it, it gets to be that the number is so great, John said they can't be counted. So those names prophesied against those folks so that we could learn to not have their attitudes. That's what's going to make the difference for us. Now, the name Hosea, which we know as Joshua, means deliverer. And Caleb is Kolev, and it means all heart. It also means dog. And we might think that that doesn't have anything to do with all heart, but you know, that's what dogs are. They're all heart. They will lie at their master's feet. They will protect their master. They will do whatever their master tells them if their master has trained them well. So Caleb is an interesting fella because he was a Kenizzite. He was not a natural-born follower of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but he was grafted in. You see, in Numbers 32:12 is where we find out that Caleb was actually the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite. But the thing is, he chose the God of Jacob over the God of the Canaanites or the Kenizzites or the Edomites or any other god, and he grafted himself into the olive tree. Now, in the wilderness, remember, there's going to be lots of ites among us, ranging from the unknown ites to the well-known ites, like Edomites, for instance. Now, some of those ites are going to be like the rabble that we've been learning about in the last Torah portions in the last few weeks, but there will be some of those ites that are going to be true believers. And so it's going to become more and more important as we draw closer to the tribulation for us to be able to identify the tares among us, and not just based on how we feel about them. You know, God doesn't care about our emotions toward people. He cares about our actions toward people. What we need to be able to do is identify people's characteristics according to the fruits of the Spirit. You see, we're not called to judge other people, but we are called to judge righteous judgment, and we are called to look at people's fruits, and we're going to have to be willing to set rebellious people outside the camps. Why do I say that we're called to judge righteous judgment? Because, you know, Yeshua said, "Judge not, that you be not judged," and that the judgment that you mete out is what you're going to be judged by. But you see, that's because he was telling us not to judge by our own measuring stick. In John chapter 7, verse 24, he says, "Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment." In the camps, we're going to have to judge the actions, the fruit of the people, the ites that are with us, according to the righteous judgments of what? The Torah. The biggest problem facing the Hebrew Roots community is the lack of righteous judgment. Let me give you some scenarios. Brethren might see somebody doing something, and so they'll say, "Well, I saw that, and I heard that, and I know what that's all about, and you know what? I'm not going to put up with that, so I'm going to leave this group, and I'm going to go out and start my own little thing." And when the other brother comes along and says, "But what? I don't understand why you're leaving." "Well, I'm leaving because you are just a cold-hearted person. You're just mean and nasty. In fact, you're an Edomite." "But what did I do?" "I'm not going there with you. You get on your knees before your father and you let him tell you what you have done." No, see, right there, that problem is splitting up the community. It's keeping us from being free men. Do you know that a free person will not have one qualm about going to their brother and saying, "Hey, you know, I saw something and I heard something and I need to make sure that I am seeing and hearing this right. If you did this, then maybe, you know, we need to pray and we'll repent of that. We'll pray together." But no, people are being mean and cruel to each other and not judging righteous judgment. They're not judging people by their fruit. They're judging people by one incident like they did back there in John chapter 7 with Yeshua. They know he keeps the Sabbath, but the righteous judgment was that there was a man right there in front of him who needed healed. Was Yeshua wrong to heal him? No, that's the work of the Father. Judge the fruit. Judge the fruit that the Father wants. Anyway, I'm not going to harp on this. I keep harping on it because we continue to have this problem. I just want to make you understand that this problem right here, splitting up because we think we know something when we probably really don't, is the difference between a slave mentality and a free person's mentality. So we need to be kind of working in that area. Now, Moses, when he sent these guys out, he had a list of things that the men needed to find out. And there were six things to find out and one thing to do. Starting in verse 17, "And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, 'Get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain and 1. See the land, what it is, and 2. The people that dwell there, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and 3. What the land is that they dwell in, whether it's good or bad, and 4. What cities there be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it 5. be fat or lean, or 6. whether there be wood in there or not, and be of good courage, and 7. bring of the fruit of the land." Now, the time that this was going on was the time of the grapes. And the Bible says they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as the men come to Hamath. So the men went, and what did they bring back? Grapes. They brought back grapes that were so huge they had to be carried by 2 men at a time. So here they come with this magnificent example of what is in the land of Canaan. And what did they say the very first thing out of their mouth? What did they say when they returned? Verse 7. "And they told him and said, 'We came to the land where you sent us, and surely it flows with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it. Oh, wow, I'm excited, and I'm ready to go. That is, until verse 28. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. And Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. Do you know that those grapes, as wonderful as they were, showing the bounty of the land, was the thing that testified about what those guys were saying? Because if you need grapes that big and that many of them, you've got some pretty big people in there. So they were using the bounty of the land to slander the land. Oh boy, you don't want to be slandering the land. It was right there that the choice to let the negative aspect of their names imbue the words that they spoke. Now, Caleb, he speaks up and he says, oh, don't worry about that. We can overcome that. But, oh no, the people start crying and whining in their tents and calling for leaders to come forth to take them back to Egypt. Literally, these people prefer to be in a backslidden state rather than to trust God to overcome the giants and the Anak that were in the land. They prefer to go back to Egypt. They prefer cowardice over courage. May we never make that choice. Numbers 14, starting in verse 5. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spoke to all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Don't fear them. But all the congregation bade that they stone them with stones, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. Uh-oh, the kids are fighting, and here comes Dad. God told Noah, remember back in Genesis, that he was not always going to strive with man. Well, look at the strife he's getting now. How many times does God have to bring the children of Israel within an inch of their lives before they will change their ways? Well, guess what? We, who are in the Hebrew Roots movement, also need to grow and get things straight in our lives according to Torah, so that when the time comes, we can prevent a repeat of the result of this Torah portion. And what is the result of it? Well, God just wanted to kill them all on the spot. Right here, I want to stop and talk about the Haftarah portion in the book of Joshua, because right there we see what would have happened had the children of Israel gone in and taken the land. You see, that is telling us right there in Joshua that God had a plan, and they were going to be able to take the land successfully. And not only that, they were going to have help. Why were they going to have help? Because there actually were people in the land that would be saved by them going in and taking the land. See, Rahab in Joshua chapter 2, you know, she would have been saved, or somebody like her, I should say, would have been saved. And so they missed their opportunity to take the land, but they also missed the opportunity to bring more people to Jehovah. So that's part of the lesson from Joshua chapter 2. Numbers 14:11. And the Lord said to Moses, How long will this people provoke me? And how long before they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of you, he's talking to Moses, a greater nation and mightier than they. Wow, that's a good boy. I'll tell you what, that's something to really think about there. You know, I'm going to take you, Moses. I'm going to do something mightier and greater than these people, and it's all going to come from you. But, you know, Moses had a heart for God. You know, we think that he says he got on his face, but the truth is that Moses was more concerned about God, which is why he reasoned with God about how this is going to affect his holy name with all the peoples of the world. You know, Moses said to God, you know, you're going to lose credibility. Then the Egyptians shall hear it, for you brought up this people in your might from among them, and they'll tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that you are Lord among this people, that you, Lord, art seen face to face, and that your cloud stands over them, and that you go before them by daytime in a pillar of cloud and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you kill this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of you will speak, saying, Because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he swore to them, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness. You see, God's credibility was on the line. The people were going to think, well, God is not so almighty. He couldn't bring these people into the land that he promised them. So Moses said, And now I beseech you, let the power of my Lord be great, according as what you have spoken, saying, The Lord is long-suffering. You see, Moses is telling the Lord the thing that the Lord told him. He's going right back and he's repeating to the Lord what the Lord said. You know, the Lord likes it when we do this. He knows we've been paying attention if we do this. What did he say to Moses before? He said, I am long-suffering, of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation. That's what he told Moses before. Well, that's what Moses is now repeating back to the Lord. And so Moses says, Pardon these people. Pardon the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your mercy. And as that you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. And the Lord answered, and he said, I have pardoned according to your word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all these men which have seen my glory and my miracles which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swore to their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it, but my servant Caleb. And then later on he says also Joshua, because he had another spirit with him. You see, I'm telling you, it's all about, now I said the word attitude, but here we have another spirit. And the spirit has to do with where is your heart. If your heart is toward God, then you have God's spirit. If your heart is not towards God, then you don't have his spirit. You have the enemy's spirit, and you have that attitude. Well, God turned the children of Israel back to the Red Sea. Now, do you know what that means, that he turned them back to the Red Sea? It means he literally took them back to the place of their deliverance and plunked them there. Now, what is the significance of that? Well, if we never move from the place of our deliverance, we will never grow beyond where we are right now. You see, God does not want spiritual babies. He doesn't want us to stick back there at the Red Sea, or back there in 1963 at the altar, where you know, we're still back there and we're still having all this baby stuff about us spiritually. He doesn't want that. He wants us to move forward with Him, not to hang on to our past. He wants us to move forward to the promised land. After the Lord made His pronouncement, the children of Israel tried to undo it. Now, let me tell you that once God pronounces something, it cannot be undone. In fact, that is another part of this teaching in Shalak Lakah, because God is taking them in to Canaan. He's going to give them Canaan. And people have often thought, well, why would He go and give them land where there's other people? Couldn't God just, you know, pick another piece of land? Well, maybe He could have. But you see, in the land that God promised Abraham, there was somebody there. And it was Canaan. It was the descendants of Canaan. And God, in Genesis chapter 9, verses 25 and 26, cursed Canaan. He cursed him. So one of the things that's going on here, besides that God has promised this land to the descendants of Abraham, is that God is bringing the curse that He gave to Ham about Ham's son Canaan. Let's read it. Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be to his brothers. He also said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, let Canaan be his servant. Now let's look at this. These folks trying to get into the promised land, what are they? They're Shemites. They are, you know, that's where we get our word anti-Semitism. Well, Semitism is, you know, the opposite of anti-Semitism, but the root of that word is Shem. And Canaan is cursed to be the servant of Shem. So God is going to fulfill two promises here. One is the curse of Canaan, and the other is the promise that He made to Abraham. So I'm telling you, when God says that something is going to be some way, it's going to be that way. When God makes a pronouncement, it cannot be undone. Now, God is extremely patient, but eventually there comes a point when He has shown the person that the person is unwilling. You know, He's shown that person's unwillingness to come on board with His plan, and at that point, once God has given that person enough time to show that they are just unwilling and they're not going to change, God has to cut bait and move on. Now, there's a saying, and I use it a lot, that you can't push a rope. God doesn't push ropes. We either go with Him, or He moves on to the next generation and leaves us behind. Now listen, if we want to overcome through the tribulation, we have to first be prepared spiritually and mentally. We have to have a free man's mindset, not a slave's mindset. You know, Mike Clayton teaches survival, but he puts spiritual mindset and mental mindset way above all the physical stuff that we can do to prepare. Because it's what we have in our heart and what we have in our mind that will make the difference whether we survive and overcome or whether we succumb to the tricks of the enemy and make the mistakes that our ancestors make. So in order to change this, to begin to transition from where we've been to where we are going, we have to do some things. First, we have to begin to equate obedience to Torah with freedom. And we have to choose the better side of our natures and shun the worse side. And we have to choose to trust God instead of cry and complain about doing the things that He wants us to do. I'm having to learn that lesson right now. That's how we'll make it. Let's not follow in the path of our ancestors. Let's make other, better choices. And let's start practicing that right now. Let's keep our noses stuck in the Torah, stuck in the New Testament, which is commentary on the Torah, and stuck in the writings and the prophets. Let's learn from what is in there, not only from the commandments and the instruction, but let's go back and read what the people did that was good. Let's do that. And, you know, if that situation ended up bad, well, let's not do that. You know, let's go back and keep our nose in our Bibles and just keep learning and keep growing spiritually, because that is what's going to make us overcomers going through the Great Tribulation. Shabbat Shalom.